the state of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilbertson presiding is now in session.
Please be seated. Right, the first case for oral argument this morning is Bree Berry, Appley, State of South Dakota is appellant. And for the appellant, we have Mr. Paul Swedlin, Assistant Attorney General from Pier. And for the Appley, Bree Berry, we have Bo Bluen, an attorney from Sioux Falls. Mr. Swedlin, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. The law is not in controversy here. It is accepted by both parties that a routine traffic stop may not be prolonged to investigate drug activity absent reasonable suspicion. As pointed out in a recent Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals case, De La Rosa versus White, 852 F3rd 740, this rule exists to prevent, quote, virtually random searches based on circumstances that describe a very large category of presumably innocent travelers. But it is important to remember that the standard here is simply reasonable suspicion and not probable cause. In De La Rosa, the court granted an officer qualified immunity from a civil rights suit alleging lack of reasonable suspicion to detain a motorist suspected of carrying illegal drugs and firearms. Citing a United States Supreme Court precedent, De La Rosa described reasonable suspicion as whether, based on the totality of the circumstances, quote, the detaining officer has a particularized and objective basis for suspecting legal wrongdoing, or whether the officer possesses at least, quote, some minimal level of objective justification. By this standard, Trooper Olson's suspicions of drug activity in this case were reasonable within 5 minutes of stopping Berry's vehicle, because Olson observed or learned particularized objective facts that differentiated Berry from the large category of presumably innocent travelers. In minute one, indeed immediately upon stopping the vehicle, he would have noted that the car was licensed in a drug source state of Colorado. When Berry handed over her license, she was shaking and nervous. During minute two of the stop, he learned that Berry had traveled to Colorado via one-way air travel. During minute three, he would have learned that she arranged for return travel to her home state of Wisconsin in a vehicle rented in the name of a third party. And she presented with a somewhat shaky story for her reasons for visiting Colorado. In minute four, she exhibited persistent nervousness despite being told she would be issued a warning ticket. And in minute five, she admitted to a prior history of drug use. The large category of innocent travelers are not people with drug records flying into drug source states and driving home in vehicles rented to third parties. The large category of innocent travelers do not shake from nerves by reason of a simple speeding ticket.
So is it the state's position that by the time the officer was aware of the drug use that there was reasonable suspicion?
State's position that certainly by minute five, reasonable suspicion was complete and it formed.
And what would you cite in support of that in terms of a case?
Little Brave, Sanford case. I mean, short of having drug mules spray painted on the side of her vehicle, Berry could not have presented more conspicuously as a drug courier to someone trained in drug interdiction, like Officer Olson.
So in the first 5 minutes, you've got nervousness, prior drug history. What else?
Travel to a drug source state via one-way air travel, return travel in a vehicle rented to a third party. Now, it's important to know that, as Trooper Olson testified at the suppression hearing, these are hallmarks of drug mule activity. Ordinary travelers don't do things this way, but it's very commonly done by those in the drug trafficking trade.
All right, well, Mr. Swedlin, I'm breaking down our role in review, those facts, were they found by the trial court that these happened within the first 5 minutes? Because that we abuse for clear error, the legal conclusion we review de novo.
Mm-hmm.
So were these found by the trial court?
Well, the trial court didn't make findings that specific, but what we see from the video is that these events did in fact occur within the first 5 minutes. So, and that video is in evidence. So the trial court made different findings that the state disagrees with. For example, that the stop was unreasonably prolonged. But in terms of finding these specific five things, the court never really reached those. After the first 5 minutes, the reasonable suspicion snowballed actually into full-blown probable cause. In minute seven, Olson tells Berry that she appears extremely nervous. In minute nine, Olson smells marijuana while writing up the warning ticket. And in minute 11, Berry admits to using marijuana in Colorado, which is itself probable cause for an ingestion charge in the state of South Dakota.
Does any of that, can the state use any of that? Because at that point, as I see this record, the officer had started the drug investigation questioning at that point. So the question is, was that prolonging? The prolonging started with the questioning, which is about 6 minutes into it.
Perhaps, but the prolonging occurred based on a reasonable suspicion that was formed as no later than 5 minutes into the stop. So the fact that it was prolonged at that point, and I don't know if you're talking about at minute 11 or minute 9, but in any event, any prolongation that occurred really after 5 minutes was based upon a reasonable suspicion.
Right, so that my question is then, these other factors that you just started into occurred after 5 minutes, are they even relevant to our analysis? Aren't we confined to what happened in the first 5 minutes?
I don't think you're confined to them because I don't think you're confined to a 5 minute time interval for a police officer to formulate reasonable suspicion or not. In fact, I think it's a much longer time frame based upon the reasonable time it takes the officer to write the ticket. In Little Brave, we were looking at a 16-minute interval. Here we were looking at only a 9-minute interval at the time at which the officer appears to be writing the ticket. We don't have a play-by-play, unfortunately, with the video, but he props the license plate up, or the driver's license up on his computer. That appears to be when he is writing the ticket. That occurs sometime in the 9-minute mark. So I don't think that there was any prolongation really at all.
The difference from Little Brave, though, is in this case you've got a finding by the trial court that says at 6 minutes the stop was effectuated, the purpose of the stop at that point. Don't you have an issue there with that finding?
I don't think so, because when you watch the video, I don't know that there was a video in Little Brave. We have a video here. We see what the officer's doing. He's not dawdling. He's typing. You see screen activity on the computer. So we have a much better sense of what's going on with this stop than we did in Little Brave. And we can see the officer working. We can see him processing things on the computer. And we can pretty well see, even though, like I said, we don't have the play-by-play, that he's writing that ticket around the 9-minute mark. And that's the time he says when he detected marijuana odor coming from Ms. Berry. And that is in and of itself probable cause to search the vehicle.
You also made the comment that the trooper smelled the marijuana at 9 minutes. The trial court found it 14 minutes.
Well, that's when the trooper articulated it. The trooper testified, however, that he detected the odor around the 9-minute mark, and that's the point in time where he also starts performing the field sobriety tests. So I think that corroborates the fact that the trooper smells this. He's going to now check her for sobriety, even though he doesn't articulate to her yet quite at that point that he has detected this odor. So Olson's graduated response to the demands of the particular situation that followed after minute five is consistent with Little Brave. 65 million Americans live in states where recreational marijuana is legal. Another 125 million live in states where medical marijuana is legal. With the rising tide of legalization, recent developments suggest that some courts have been getting cold feet about enforcing marijuana laws. Some have appeared confused by how to reconcile so-called legal use in other states with illegal possession in another. And the trial court here said as much, negating the suspicion factor of marijuana odor on Barry's clothes based on her legal use in Colorado. The law of search and seizure, however, does not fluctuate based on the type of contraband in question. Gun running and drug muling often go hand in hand, and bad law made because of tepid enforcement of marijuana laws will haunt and frustrate efforts to interdict methamphetamine, heroin, illegal firearms, sex traffickers, or other universally illegal forms of contraband. Bree Berry herself is a admittedly somewhat amusing and cheeky figure, funding one's studies in criminal justice with proceeds from drug muling is irony worthy of a Coen Brothers movie, but diluting the enforcement of standards because of a shift in the winds on marijuana prohibition in other parts of the country can have serious implications. Search and seizure standards cannot be relaxed situationally for one type of contraband without compromising law enforcement's ability to police other forms of contraband. Accordingly, the state asks that this court reverse the trial court's order suppressing the suitcase full of marijuana found in Bree Berry's vehicle.
Before you leave, with Little Bear, do we have the Rosa, De La Rosa case deals with different issue. It's a civil case, but they talk about extending the traffic stop for, I think it was 50 minutes or something of that nature. South Dakota law different than that, isn't it? I mean, can you extend it all in South Dakota to without reasonable suspicion?
Well, I think it would depend on the circumstances. Let's say, for example, that a driver claims he can't find his driver's license, and it takes 20, 30 minutes for, lo and behold, the driver to produce a driver's license. Things that might frustrate the processing of the stop can be myriad in the context of a traffic stop. So I don't think there's any time limit that applies.
Right, but that's extending by. What I'm getting at is, can you extend it all to wait for the drug dog? Can the officer extend it all absent reasonable suspicion to wait for drug dog?
The officer can do both at the same time, can simultaneously process and wait for the dog. I think the law is pretty clear that once the processing is complete and the purpose of the stop has been effectuated, that the prolongation cannot occur absent reasonable suspicion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very well. Mr. Boyne, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. Question before this court is whether the circuit court erred in ruling that the trooper had unlawfully extended the traffic stop, in this case under Rodriguez, when he conducted a criminal investigation into matters unrelated to the circumstances justifying the stop, which was for a speeding infraction, and thus violated Ms. Berry's Fourth Amendment rights. On behalf of Ms. Berry, I ask the court to affirm the circuit court's order to suppress the evidence in this case because Ms. Berry was unlawfully seized when the trooper detoured from the mission of the stop and continuously questioned Berry about the contents of her vehicle, continuously and repeatedly sought consent to get into her vehicle, and then began running field sobriety tests, all in the absence of objective reasonable suspicion to believe that a crime was occurring. Now, Ms. Berry does not dispute that there was a lawful justification to stop her vehicle that morning for the speeding infraction. That's not in dispute. As this court has observed, once a lawful traffic stop is initiated, an officer is entitled to conduct an investigation reasonably related in scope to the circumstances that justified the stop in the first place. An investigative detention must be temporary and last no longer than is necessary to effectuate the purpose of the stop. And in Rodriguez v. United States, the United States Supreme Court clarified the tolerable duration and scope of police inquiries in a traffic stop context. The Rodriguez court explained that a seizure for a traffic violation justifies an investigation into that violation. And the court said, like a Terry stop, the scope of the police inquiries is measured and determined by the seizure's mission, and that is to address the traffic violation and any safety concerns. And a trooper is allowed to also conduct certain inquiries without additional reasonable suspicion and without having any sort of type of additional suspicion. They may run checks on the driver's license, check for warrants, inspect the proof of insurance and registration. And those types of inquiries are part of the traffic mission. They serve the same goal of ensuring that vehicles are operated safely on the roadway. But measures aimed at detecting ordinary criminal wrongdoing, such as the dog sniff in Rodriguez, or the drug-related interrogation in this case, or the field sobriety tests, those cannot be fairly characterized as part of the traffic mission.
So what about the indicia of reasonable suspicion addressed by Mr. Sweetland in the first 5 minutes of the stop? One-way ticket, travel to a source state, car rented by a third party, the nervousness and the shaking, is that alone sufficient?
No. And you see a similar case in United States v. Beck where they addressed very similar factors and went through each one and accorded each one its proper and due weight. The drug source state, the Eighth Circuit and U.S. v. Beck considered the same argument in regards to California and determined it should be relegated to an insignificant role because millions of Americans travel to and from California. The same is true for Colorado. 77.7 million people traveled to and from Colorado in 2015. The trooper didn't testify that it was any more likely coming from Colorado than Texas, Arizona, California, Nevada. These are all peripheral sort of profiling indicia of reasonable suspicion.
Right, but don't we have a totality of the circumstances analysis here? We don't slice and dice. You could explain away anything.
True.
It's isolated.
You don't slice and dice. And the state talks about you can't divide and conquer. But in order to intelligently review each factor, I think you have to separate them out first and consider each one and the weight they have and then put them together cumulatively and say, do we have the necessary reasonable suspicion at this point? The inconsistent story. When Ms. Berry drove past the trooper that morning on December 2nd, 2016, the trooper was already suspicious that criminal activity was afoot. The trooper testified that when she passed him, he, quote, or she, quote, took a long look at me. And according to the trooper's testimony, that was an indicator of criminal activity at that point. Now the testimony revealed that long look never made its way into the written report of the officer. Never mentioned in the video of the stop, and perhaps that's why the state does not raise that as an indicator in this case, but if there was a long look in this case, it's merely a reflection of the officer's subjective suspicions that morning. Now, when he pulls her over that morning, other than the speeding infraction, there's no swerving, no weaving, no sudden jerks on the wheel. She uses her turn signal, pulls over. The trooper approaches the front passenger door, speaks to her through the open passenger door. He says he didn't notice any furtive movements. He says when she handed him the driver's license, her hand was shaking, so he believed her to be nervous. He didn't smell the odor of any marijuana or of intoxicants, any type of drugs, didn't smell any masking agents, didn't smell any large quantities of air fresheners, anything that would be commonly used to mask the smell of drugs, perhaps. Didn't notice any suspicious items in the vehicle. No paraphernalia, no rolling papers, nothing. And the trooper looked. You can see in the video when he's walking back right before to the patrol vehicle with Miss Berry, he's bending his neck and looking, peering back through the back passenger window, trying to see if there's anything suspicious in there. The trooper had a hunch at that point, and he was set on getting into the vehicle. And when they got back to the vehicle, he asked Miss Berry about her travel plans. And he starts running the checks. And she tells him she had flown out to Denver and she had been there for about 10 days with her brother, that her brother had been participating in an FDA clinical trial, and that her mom wanted her to be out there with him. Then he asks her about her employment. She tells him where she works. And then they talk about the rental agreement papers, and Miss Berry tells him that his brother's girlfriend's name is also on the rental agreement because she didn't have a debit or credit card to get the rental car herself. And the trooper, when hearing that, says, so he did have a girlfriend with him then. That's the entire basis of the inconsistent story. As if to say, Miss Berry's explanation was implausible because Miss Berry's brother had a girlfriend living in the area.
Did she ever give an explanation of why she bought a one-way ticket to Colorado and drove back?
I don't believe so, and I don't believe that the trooper ever asked her why. She didn't say whether her mom flew her out there because she wanted her to be out there with the brother or why she ended up taking a rental car back. That was never discussed. But the trooper didn't ask any follow-up questions after he said, so he did have a girlfriend with him then. The trooper had a hunch he wasn't interested in what the answer was. So after about 3 minutes inside the vehicle, 3 minutes from being pulled over, Miss Berry, he tells her that he's issuing a speeding citation, and he tells her he's dropping it to over 5 miles per hour over the speed limit. And then he goes back into asking her about travel, asks her what her mom does in Wisconsin, and you can see the detour from the mission of the traffic stop start at that point. Just under maybe 6 minutes into the video, just under 5 minutes from when the vehicle pulled over, the circuit court found, and it appears, that all of the necessary checks had been run, the driver's license, which was valid, no warrants, all the checks had been run, no apparent safety concerns. Police inquiries related to the traffic mission had been effectuated.
Well, I want to ask you about that because that's what the trial court found, but the ticket hadn't been issued. I guess I'm not clear from the record when that ticket should have been issued.
Well,
and how much time, you know, obviously, you know, they fill in the ticket, they give it to them, they explain it. That process never took place. And so that's somewhere after 6 minutes, but can you talk about that in the record?
Well, we know that from viewing the video that citation was never written out. We know that when the trooper starts interrogating Berry about drugs, there's at least a minute and a half, 2 minutes where he has maybe one hand or no hands on the keyboard. The circuit court found that the trooper was killing time, biding time. Everything seemed to be drawn out for the purpose of continuing the interview. He runs her through all types of questions on whether she has methamphetamine, cocaine, marijuana, heroin in the vehicle. She says no. And then the trooper says, well, did you just bring back a little bit? She said no. Then he says, well, in the state of South Dakota, I don't know if you know, but we run drug dogs around vehicles here, and would there be anything that the dog would indicate on? And Miss Berry said something like, no, it's all right. Then the trooper later tried to convince her that she had consented to the drug dog sniff from that answer, and she politely told him, no, I didn't consent. And then she says, well, if I take a look in the vehicle, will I find anything? And Ms. Berry says, no, you won't. And he says, so it's okay if I look in the vehicle then. And she says, no. And after that tactic failed, he said, well, what would you say if I told you that I had information that you were transporting drugs? And Ms. Berry said, that would be a lie. And the trooper then backed off and said, oh, I'm just asking a hypothetical. And so what does the trooper do at that point? At 9:36:06, about 10 minutes into the video, he wasn't completing the citation at that point, doesn't have either hand on the keyboard. He doesn't call for the canine at that point. Apparently, the trooper doesn't believe he has reasonable suspicion to do that at that point either. He starts running field sobriety tests. Absolutely no legal justification to start running field sobriety tests at this point. He testified at the motion to suppress hearing that he didn't observe any signs of intoxication on Ms. Berry. None. And the state says that he had smelled the odor of marijuana at minute 9. That's not what the circuit court found. The circuit court said minute 14, and there was good reason for that. The trooper was all over the map on when this odor had been smelled. He said, I don't remember. We have to look at the video. It was after, or once I started working on the citation, then it was after I had begun field sobriety tests that I had smelled the odor. And he doesn't even reference it until minute 14. Coincidentally, a couple minutes after Ms. Berry had admitted to legal use of marijuana 2 days prior. And the circuit court sort of suggested her doubt of the credibility of that, saying, by the look of the record, it was 14 minutes into the stop before the trooper mentioned, and she believed he was just killing time, biding time. And we know that he was not completing the citation. He hadn't asked for the drug dog yet. And this is exactly what Rodriguez was talking about. No reasonable suspicion. He's conducting a criminal investigation into matters without reasonable suspicion that she's intoxicated. He's adding time to the stop from 9:36:06, and I think it's a key point, to 9:37:32 before Ms. Berry, eventually, he gets her to admit to legal use of marijuana in Colorado. He's conducting field sobriety tests, a clear violation under Rodriguez.
Can the officer use legal use of marijuana in Colorado as a basis for reasonable suspicion?
I don't think so, because possession by ingestion, if someone admits that they had used where it's legal, the violation would be where it's ingested. Evidence of something being in someone's system would be evidence of the ingestion, but it's legal in Colorado. And I think it's akin to perhaps maybe an 18-year-old drives up to Canada to drink alcohol legally, and when he's driving back to the States, he gets pulled over and admits to the trooper officer that he had drank alcohol legally in Canada. That's not reasonable suspicion of transporting alcohol in the car.
Is that really an issue before the court in this case?
I don't think it is, because I think at this point...
Or do you really want us to go there?
I don't, and I think it's arguable, but I think clearly the stop has been unlawfully extended by this point, and that's what the court found. But the state does argue that the smell, the odor, the faint odor was smelled at minute 9, then suggested it was minute 10, minute 12. The circuit court did not clearly err that this was noticed at minute 14. The nervousness that the trooper says he noticed. The Eighth Circuit and other courts have determined that individuals' nervousness when confronted by police has limited significance, and that's U.S. v. Jones. The state wants to give double weight in this case, two factors for nervousness, one for initial and one for persistent nervousness. And in U.S. v. Jones, the court stated, because the government repeatedly relies on nervousness as a basis for reasonable suspicion, it must be treated with caution. Such caution is certainly warranted in this case. The trooper says, you know, normally when I pull people over, they're nervous until I tell them that I'm giving them a speeding citation. Well, I don't think that logic applies to this case, because shortly after he tells her he's writing a citation, he launches into a drug-related interrogation. I think any normal 25 or 26-year-old female alone in a vehicle with a trooper experience those types of tactics would have nervousness, persistent nervousness.
So a minute five or six, Ms. Berry says, I'm a recovering heroin addict and I worked off some criminal charges a few years ago as a CI. Right. There's a number of courts that say that combined with some of these other indicia may be reasonable suspicion. Can you address that here?
Well, first of all, I think it's, at that point, I believe all of the stop had been unlawfully extended right about that point when he starts asking her, have you been in trouble before? I think at that point he's detouring from the mission of the stop. But I think it's also important to note when you look at her admitting to the prior crime and her past that there's no indication in the record that the trooper actually conducted a criminal background check in this case. He didn't testify to that. He said that he asked her if she'd ever been in trouble before. There's no evidence that she had a drug trafficking offense in her history. And there's nothing, which I think is important, there's nothing to show that she was trying to conceal anything from the officer. And I think the Eighth Circuit in U.S. v. Riley, 684 F3D 758, talks about that. It's one thing, to try to conceal the fact from the officer that you have a prior criminal conviction or you're an addict in the past. But the fact that she acknowledged this, perhaps not even the trooper may not even been looking through her background. And admitted this, it's not indicative of a crime being currently committed. Now, if she was trying to conceal it from the officer, that's one thing. Then the officer may have reasonable suspicion that he's trying to conceal this drug history for a reason, and that might heighten suspicion. But I think the admission she makes in this case, considered even with these other factors cumulatively, does not add up to reasonable suspicion. Although it is possible for a combination of innocuous factors, in some cases, to add up to reasonable suspicion, viewing the factors presented in this case, both individually and cumulatively, they did not establish reasonable suspicion to justify the trooper's detour from the mission of the stop. And I urge the court to resist the temptation of allowing the ends to justify the means. When the trooper began interrogating Berry, repeatedly trying to get her consent to look through her belongings in the vehicle, and then conducted field sobriety tests in the absence of any indication that she was intoxicated or impaired. He had a hunch. It was the same hunch that he had when Miss Berry passed him on the interstate with Colorado license plates. But that hunch had never developed into reasonable suspicion that a crime was being committed when he detoured from the mission of the stop. As a result, the trooper unlawfully extended the traffic stop under Rodriguez and violated the Fourth Amendment. And for those reasons, Ms. Berry respectfully asks the court to affirm the circuit court's order suppressing the evidence in this case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Hey, Mr. Swetland, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal, sir.
Mr. Blowen's correct that the state did not list the long look that Berry gave the trooper as a indicia of suspicion because it's not a recognized one. I could find no case authority for the proposition that giving a trooper a long look as a motorist passes is any indication of suspicious activity. The suspicion factors, however, that the state does rely on the source and state, the nervousness, the one-way air travel, third-party rental vehicle, inconsistent story, persistent nervousness, drug offense history, and drug odor. Those are very, very well recognized and frequently relied upon indicia of suspicion of drug activity that have been noted in numerous court cases. In Little Brave, we had the combination of source state, nervousness, one-way air travel, third-party rental vehicle, and inconsistent story. And that was only five. And in this case, we have between eight and nine. In the Trejo case, that was a federal case. There were source state, nervousness, inconsistent story, persistent nervousness, and a drug odor in Trejo. Sanford, there were only four, source state, nervousness, third-party vehicle, and drug offense history. In the world of drug interdiction that's occupied by these troopers out on the highway, these first five factors that were observed by Trooper Olson in the first 5 minutes are very, very strong indicia of drug activity. Certainly people do travel to California and Colorado, but they don't do it on a one-way air ticket usually.
Does the trooper have the right to ask that type of question? It seems as it's an interdiction colloquy right out of the gate. In essence, premised on the fact that we have an out-of-state plate and a person pulled over for speeding.
Yes,
then begins the interdiction colloquy.
Yes, the trooper does have that right to ask questions while processing the ticket, which he clearly was doing. He does not divert himself. There's no evidence of that on the video of him diverting himself from the processing of the stop while he's asking these questions. And nor was he required, as Barry suggests, to elicit innocent explanations for everything that Barry, all the red flags that Barry had. He wasn't required to have her explain why she had a one-way ticket or why she rented the vehicle or why the vehicle isn't in her name. The trooper is allowed to simply rely on his experience. And if those things add up to suspicion of drug activity, drug mule profile, he's allowed to rely on that.
I want to ask you about Little Brave in that, and you mentioned it earlier, and you said, you know, you think that it's similar reasonable suspicion here. Little Brave, so then there were additional three questions asked based on that reasonable suspicion, and I think the defendant in that case admitted to having drugs in the car, admitted to use of drugs, one or the other. This case, there's another 4, 5, 6 minutes of questioning, plus another 6, 7 minutes waiting for a drug dog, and another couple of minutes the dog running around the exterior of the vehicle. So different than Little Brave, would you agree?
The timing's a little bit different, but the operative fact that reasonable suspicion was formed at a certain point and that the stop was not prolonged really is indistinguishable from this case in Little Brave. The fact that there is waiting for the drug dog to arrive, that's okay as long as the reasonable suspicion justifies the wait. And it's the state's position that reasonable suspicion was formed very early on in this stop.
Well, how long can he wait? I mean, you know, can he wait infinitum, or is there a limit on how long you can wait for the drug dog?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. We'll probably have that case someday, but in this case, the drug dog was there relatively quickly before even the stop was finished processing. So I don't think that the duration of the wait for the drug dog in this case was unreasonable. And we see that Olson, we were on the video, we see that he does initiate the field sobriety test. And he testified that he smelled the marijuana about the time he started writing the ticket. And that was during the 9 minute mark. And then he also testified that he smelled the burnt marijuana about the time that he initiated the field sobriety test. Those are very close in time. Those are within 30 seconds of each other, if you look at the video. So the idea that he's all over the map saying something wildly inconsistent is incorrect. Those two events occur within 30 seconds of each other on the video. And then if we look at the trial court's analysis for whether this is error or clear error, there are just some troubling aspects to the form of the analysis performed by the trial court. The trial court did not count or give due weight to the indicia of suspicion that were present. The trial court did use kind of a divide and conquer approach, And the trial court analyzed the stop from the subjective perspectives of the court itself and from Barry's innocent explanations. And I think it's hard to give the court the full credit of a clear error analysis in determining when the officer detected the odor of marijuana when the court is not really performing the proper form of legal analysis. The court is looking at this subjectively. The court is looking at this from a divide and conquer standpoint. And I think based upon the error of the court's analysis, her finding that this was that the trooper did not really detect the odor of marijuana until the 14-minute mark is in fact clear error. Unless the court has any further questions.
I guess not. Thank you for your time, counsel. The court will be in recess until 11 o'clock.